Hey everybody, welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry. I am not greedy for money. I just hate being broke. Today's guest is going to school us all about her debt repayment journey. She is a doctor. She has an amazing story about the amount of debt she found herself in, choices that she made in terms of career, the aha moment. And basically, today I wanted to talk to her about tackling long-term debt repayment. It feels like there are a lot of people out there who are like, hey man, I had a debt of $100,000 and I paid it off in 4 months. And you know what? I'm so excited for them. But honestly, there are a lot of us that that's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. It's unrelatable. And while we're excited for these people and proud of them, I felt like it was really important to bring some other stories to the table so that if you're having a long-term debt repayment journey like I am, you'll have some hope, some guidance, some reassurance, and some community, basically, as you tackle whatever debts you're taking care of. I find this story very inspiring, kind of a little bit scary when it comes to the U.S. educational system and cost. And yeah, we're going to go get deep into it. So without further ado, welcome to my guest, Dr. Jen. Thank you so much for joining me today. And if you could kind of introduce yourself and let us know who you are and why in the heck I reached out to you or why you think I reached out to you, that would be awesome.
Well, hello, everyone. I am Dr. Jen, MD. I am a board-certified surgeon who found herself in a lot of debt. Basically, I was living paycheck to paycheck, so I had to figure out a plan quickly to stop doing that, figure out how to pay off my bills, and actually become financially fit. So right now, I help other doctors and other high-income professionals figure out a plan to make it to their side, to reach financial freedom. And I think you, I think we communicated because I owed a lot to a lot of people.
So I want to kind of get down into the nitty gritty. We're going to be all up in your business a little bit. So sure. How much did you owe? Are you done with your debt repayment journey now, or are you still are you at the tail end of it? And talk us through that aha moment. So how much do you owe? Did you owe or do you owe? Are you still in the journey? And what was the aha moment? Like this isn't working for me.
So we've paid off everything but the house we currently live in.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, thank you. But it was a long, long journey. I want to say, I mean, I haven't added up everything since we started paying any credit card every single month, but it was more than $1.9 million.
Holy my God.
Exactly. So it's kind of like the heart attack numbers where you're like, how did this happen to me? Like, what did I do wrong? Like, I'm smart. How did I screw up this bad?
Yeah. I mean, you're a freaking surgeon. You're not, I mean, you're not even smart. You're brilliant. So there you go.
Well, it's relative because obviously I found myself in this huge like crater / ditch. Exactly. No, I think it's the same thing that happens to a lot of people. Like you're going on with life. You're just living the way that culture tells you should live. Mm-hmm. And if you start paying attention, you kind of look around and realize what mess you're in. And then you try to figure out how to get yourself out of it. And it's not easy. And there's not a lot of people to support you either. It's fairly difficult.
What was the debt? I mean, I'm assuming a lot of it was school, but maybe like school and mortgage, like what was it?
Okay. So I'll actually tell you some numbers because I always like it when people just make it real. So I did my residency and fellowship in Baltimore. We lived, you're groaning. So we lived outside of Baltimore because my husband worked on the other side of DC in Virginia. So we had a house there. He had a bright idea to have an investment property that I knew nothing about. We had student loans on his side and my side. Mine were for medical school. I had a full ride to undergrad. Wow. We had two car payments. We had three children. we had a nanny because with my job, I basically, daycare does not work.
No.
It's just a reality that I learned about. So I just paid her whatever she wanted so she'd keep coming to my house and watch my children.
I have friends with nannies, and yes, I understand that.
Do what you got to do. So let me see. We had credit cards from a failed business. We had credit cards because we had credit cards. We had loans for kids to get tutoring. We had private school because even though we had a nanny, one went to preschool because we thought she needed more social activity. Let me see what else we owned. We owed my in-laws.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting. Yeah. So if you add up like four or five credit cards that are almost maxed out, two homes, student loans that were, I think mine were probably close to 300,000. His were like 150,000. Yeah. It works out to be about 1.9 million at the end of the day, because after I finished residency and fellowship, we moved to Virginia, and guess what? We built a house because, you know, that's what doctors do. I mean, they'll give you the money, so you just do it. So, yeah, that's what the debt was.
Are you guys both doctors?
No, my husband's actually a basketball coach.
Whoa. Okay, so, I mean, right now, I feel a little verklempt listening to these numbers. Like, really, I'm like, oh, God. So, yeah. How did this even come up? Like, did you guys, were one day, like, did a credit card get rejected? Like, how did you... I guess what I'm trying to figure out is you're living your life, right? Things are getting paid, but you know, maybe things are a little messy, but things are getting done and you're enjoying your life and the kids are cute and food is good. You know what I mean? You're just living life. What in the world came up that you're like, maybe this isn't working. Like maybe we need to go through the list. Did you guys have a husband, wife come to Jesus moment? Like what in the world, how did it come to your attention that it had gotten this out of control?
It's called the IRS.
Oh,
we have a bill that you can't pay. Yes. Yes.
Oh.
So one of the things that people don't tell you when you start making significant amounts of money is that all of the tax laws you've done for most of your adult life no longer apply to you. They're called phase outs. So a lot of the things that we were used to claiming and getting credits for no longer applied. And so even at that point when we were both employees, we were not withholding enough and we weren't putting money aside for all of the phase outs and the alternative minimal tax that showed up. So the first year of my attendinghood, which means after you finish residency, when this is like your first real job, we got a tax bill of $14,000. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I couldn't write a check for that. The problem was I was getting paid very well, more than anyone else I knew that wasn't in medicine. And it just became very apparent that I did not manage my money well. It's because who are you going to complain to? I can't just like complain to my friends. Oh my gosh, we owe this money. They just think, well, you know what? You made more than I made like the past 3 years. You screwed up. I have no sympathy for you. So it was a very humbling moment because you don't really have anywhere to turn to. No one feels bad for you. At all. And the resources that are out there, what am I going to do? Google doctor in debt needs help. Can you give me a loan? Like
it's a mess.
Yeah, I was a mess. And so the first thing I did was question my CPA, of course, because, you know, I'm smart. So I found another one. And he was like, nah, shorty, like you owe money.
He's like, I hate to tell you this.
Exactly.
Wow. And so, you know, you hear this startling news more than once from qualified people who know numbers.
Yes.
Who did you have basically no one to turn to.
Yeah.
What was that conversation like for your husband? Like, I'm not married yet. I'm looking forward to one day making this happen. Apparently it's happening slow. But I cannot imagine, and actually, I'm going to say it this way. One of the biggest issues that I've had with dating in the last few years was because of my debt. And I was like, this isn't a conversation I want to have with these people until I have a plan, right? And so it's just something I just don't want to, I don't want to be like, hey, rolling into a date and we're getting serious. By the way, I have this like really big mess and I have no plan. So this is a little different because you guys are married already. You guys have been living your lives. How do you have a conversation like this? Like, we've got to make some changes. And was one person a spender and the other a saver? Are you guys kind of on the same financial page in terms of habits? How did you even get one another to agree on what the course of action would be?
Well, so we're going to keep this real, and hopefully my husband won't listen to this.
Don't listen.
So we were completely on different pages. Mm. My husband felt fine with debt, comfortable with debt. My husband was happy with his Range Rover. I drove a car from the auction. He wore Ferragamo's, Gucci, Prada. I wore whatever came from eBay that looked nice. So
it was. Oh my Lord. I have another question after you go through this, because this is funny.
So it was night and day. So I was traumatized. Mm. And I felt like a failure, because you know what? I was the breadwinner for the family. We have three kids. It's not like we could just say, okay, kids, you know, we're not eating tomorrow, or we have to move, or I'm getting evicted. I'm in foreclosure. Right. It's not even an option. I mean, I was a doctor. I was in the community. Things come out. If I can't manage my money, would people even think I knew what I was doing with medicine? I mean, it's not even something that you can ignore. And my husband was just like, okay, just pay it. I'm thinking like, that would be great, but we don't have the money. And at that point he was like, oh, hmm. So we really, I'm anal because I'm a surgeon. So what did I do? I set up a database, and literally I listed every single one of our debts. And this was May of 2010. And I still have it on my laptop. Every single month, I put the balance of every single account, so I could total it every single month and see how much we were paying off. And that was one thing that kept me going. And I was able to like tell my husband, guess what? We have a new like zero balance. And we would, after we paid off the credit cards, we'd put them somewhere else. Like, we put them in like our safe. We wouldn't use them at all. I would talk to my husband about how much he was spending on X, Y, and Z, because he's of the philosophy, you have to live life. Right. I'm of the philosophy is like, you have to plan, because my world is planning. If you don't plan, you have a bad outcome. So we've really had to balance that over the years. And I mean, a lot of, I won't say fights, I'll just say very heated discussions regarding how to spend our money and what we should do. And I think we've worked out a happy medium where we do save, we do take vacations, because that's what we value, time together. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of the other stuff, the material stuff, we no longer feel is as important. We don't have to show people that we have money. We just do.
Mm. I wanted to ask, when you were talking about your personal financial habits, mm-hmm. do you think that there's something to do with like when your husband was a kid, he observed something in terms of finances and that affected how he wanted to use his money? Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. One of the things I realized when I started, not even when I started, but kind of when I was midway through doing my financial journey and kind of really looking at my money and where it was going, I was like, you know, I remember being in seventh grade, and I'll never forget this, actually. I was wearing Kmart boots. I totally remember this. I was wearing tan Kmart boots, and I was in a country day school, like a very, very posh one. I'm from Colorado. I was there at that time. And my mom's car died. Mm-hmm. And the students, the upperclassmen, because there was upperclassmen and lowerclassmen, that's how they do it. The upperclassmen had to what do you call it? When the car dies, they had jump. They had to jump my mom's car. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget it. It was, nowadays, I'm like, that car was really cool, but it was like this this cute Mustang, actually. It was cool, blue. And I always remember being so upset. Not only was my mom's car jumped by the upperclassmen who had cars that were worth 10 times the amount, 10, 15, 20 times the amount of the car that my mom had, but I was wearing these plastic shoes. Colorado is not warm. And I remember it being a cold day. So it was like, I had these plastic boots. This is a mess. And so I think as I got older, I got really focused on like the external and having really good quality things and That was a thing for me. Even now, it's not a thing in the same way because I've figured out how to do everything for free, mm-hmm. but I have like this talent that if I go in a store, I am always able to figure out what's the most expensive thing. It's a thing. And I didn't understand that my mom was doing the best she could with what she had, right? Like parents mm-hmm. were divorced. She was totally broke. She had me in this amazingly posh, you know, school, private school, getting an amazing education. And, you know, you're a kid, you don't get it. So right. do you think that, like, what were your financial stories like? And how do you think they played out in this money story as adults?
I think it definitely had a huge influence. So I grew up, in Cleveland. I went to an all-girls private school. You learn languages at a very early age. Mm-hmm. My mother's side of the family is from Barbados. So we mm-hmm. would go annually to visit family. I thought this was normal. I grew up with a housekeeper. Mm-hmm. She didn't drive, but she took care of everything else. So in my world, my parents were not the wealthiest family there, but we didn't struggle. So I had no idea how much money my parents made. And looking back, they didn't make a whole lot, but we lived fairly frugally. And so what they valued was education. Mm-hmm. I'm probably a little bit older than you, so I don't know.
You probably know. Black don't crack. But I'll just say I'm a comfortable Gen Xer. We'll just leave it at that.
I'm like a couple decades older than you, even though I don't.
Whatever.
Yeah, I have a 19-year-old, so I am older.
I'm not even going to talk to you right now. No.
But one of the things in the 80s was there was a commercial for Zips. It was like the fake out Nikes. And so I remember that I really wanted Nikes. And my father was just like, it's not practical. You're growing. You have a brother and a sister because there were three kids and we're not going to buy it. So I had Zips instead. So I was fine with that. I was just kind of low key. People valued kind of what I did more because they assumed everyone was around the same socioeconomic standard. Mm-hmm. On my husband's side though, he grew up very differently. His family was the first one to move out of the park. So like in the South, the hood is called the park.
What park is it? That sounds nice. Again, I'm from Colorado. Just don't mind me.
Yes. East Coast hoods are called parks.
So. Oh, yes. I've literally just learned something.
So, they were the first one. A lot of different family members lived with them at various times when they got down on their luck. So since there wasn't a lot of money to go around, your clothing, your style, and your appearance is what defined you. Right. Because no one really had money. But if you had some nice stuff, you kind of changed your social status. So when we got together, I mean, we met in like freshman year of college. So very, very different mindsets. But I mean, everyone's broke in college. No one really talks about money. And it wasn't really until we got married and we decided to have a joint budget, i.e., which means a joint account, we actually didn't really talk about things, that we understood how different our backgrounds really were and our ideas about money and wealth and like legacy. It was very different. Mm. And until recently, I think we still had those same kind of discussions because, I mean, like he drove a Range Rover and I drove a Pacifica. I mean,
what the hell is a Pacifica?
Oh, you have jokes. Oh, so.
No, I'm really serious. I'm going to have to Google this. I drive a $1,500 car and I love that. It's a Nissan Protégé. I love this car. Okay. I love my car, but I do not know what a Pacifica is.
So I thought a Pacifica was, it's like the hybrid that wasn't really the minivan because it had four doors and it had like captain seats with like video inside. So my kids wouldn't talk to me the entire time while driving. And then, so they just came out again. I want to say for like 2017 or 2018, they came back out. They were discontinued for a while, but yeah, that's what I was rocking. Okay.
I'm going to Google this the minute we get off this. Oh my God. Okay. I'm Googling it. Wow. It's so funny because, so would you say that you guys were both equal in terms of like socializing and food quality or like, were there other things where you guys were really on the same page and it wasn't a big deal?
No, not really. So, so socializing, I mean, my husband, so initially when I went to med school in Chicago, he was a basketball coach there. So living in downtown Chicago is a very different place than living like in the suburbs somewhere else. So he was a lot more social. He had a lot more free time than I did. So he would shop or window shop a lot more. When we got married, had kids, still after games, things like that, he would go out hanging with his friends, things like that. I didn't really have much time for social because I know there now there's a law of an 80-hour work week, but that actually wasn't the standard when I was training. I would work consistently 100, 110 hours a week. So I literally had time. I mean, and this is with three kids. So I had time to come home, take a shower, inhale some food, pass out to start again. At times I would drive to work at like 3:30 because rounds were 4:30 or 5. So we could be in the OR by 6:30.
A.M. So,
oh yeah. AM. Sorry. I just assumed, you know, okay.
No, I want the listeners to be clear. She's talking morning people.
Yes. So I didn't really have much of a social life. I mean, my social circle was the hospital and the people who were in the hospital because in that, I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm a surgical subspecialist. I want to say that less than 7% of these subspecialists are women in the United States. How many are African American women?
I think it's like you and like three other ladies.
Well, at least there's 20 of us because I know about 7 of them. So, so there's not that many. So you know what? I don't have an opportunity to screw up or fail because that doesn't just impact me. It impacts the next person they select for the position because they're going to just, they've never seen me, never, they don't know anybody else in that position. So they're going to assume we're all the same. So I had to make sure I was on the top of my game. So he had a life. I just worked. That's all I did.
So I have several friends who are doctors and one who is in emergency medicine and was really fortunate. She is from here as well and was really lucky to find a job here. And one of the reasons why she went into emergency medicine was because of life balance. Mm-hmm. And she was able to get into a group where they, you know, they work at different hospitals or whatever, but there's just like a certain number of hours that she's working a month and she's good. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, emotionally, did that take a toll on you? Like, I get that it's not, you were resident before, you know, 2018 when we're speaking, but how was that emotionally? Because I would, as proud as I would be about being, you know, a surgeon and like one of like 7 other black ladies doing this and I'm changing the world, I would feel a certain sense of resentment and a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. you know, and I am an emotional spender actually. So I would, in my case, I'd be like, you know, that 5 minutes that I've got in between my nap and getting into the car, I'm going to buy something. So how did you manage all this? And did you spend or were you like, I didn't even have time to spend?
You don't really have time to spend because my focus wasn't even on anything. It was survival.
Wow.
Literally. Like I would go home, take a shower because Lord knows what was on me. Then I would eat because like that may be my one meal of the day.
Right.
And then I would just talk to my kids so they at least like knew who I was. I mean, so as an aside, one time I had a day off. I don't know what happened. Something happened. And so I took a kid to one of these like mommy and me circle times. And it was so embarrassing because I didn't know any of the moves. And of course the lady's like, are you the nanny?
Hell no.
Yeah. So I won't say what I actually said to her, but my child never went back. So so I didn't really have much time to spend or think about money. The money just went into the account and then went directly to my nanny. So that's just the way it was. Did I feel like I was missing something? No, because I felt that, you know, everything happens for a reason. There was a reason that I was blessed to be in this position, to have this opportunity. And that I felt I was capable. So if I was told I was capable and I felt I was capable, there is no reason why I couldn't do exactly the same as everyone else. Just because I'm a woman, just because I have a uterus, did not mean that I could not do it. Mm. And so I just did it.
So I want you to walk me through, you guys have looked at the numbers, you've had a small heart attack, you're like, oh my God, what did you guys do? Like, what were the actual changes that you embraced as a family, as a couple, to make this happen? Like, did you start researching debt repayment? Did you become a Dave Ramsey fan? Like, what happened? And what were the first steps? Because I know that you, like, for people who are listening, if you're wondering, I'm not going to say what I think your wage is, but salary. But I typically, with my friends who are doctors, they're making six figures, and it's not like $100,000. They're doing very well. And they've spent 12 years studying, so they should be paid that way. Period, end of story. So you do have a substantial amount of money. Your spouse is making money. Your husband's making money. But you've got this, I mean, you're still, the amount you owe versus what you are earning, you're screwed. So Right. What do you do as a high income earner where no one's going to be sympathetic to you, to what's going on with you? You really don't have anyone to turn to. What's step number one?
Make the list. So that was the biggest turning point for me, was to actually figure out what I owed to who. Mm-hmm. That brought a lot of clarity to our situation, and it helped me develop a plan to pay it off, because I could look at the numbers and I could target what emotionally I needed to pay off quickly. And of course, part of that was the in-laws.
I know that was on that list. Number one.
Know. My in-laws are great people, but
still,
yeah, they give their shirt off their back if we needed something. And unfortunately, the money, all right, I'm going to shame myself right now.
Oh, no.
So the money that we borrowed from them was to pay for membership into the country club. I'm just going to be completely transparent, because I know other people.
Shame. I'm wagging my finger at you right now. The shame of it all.
So that was grating on me, because first of all, I don't really play.
Do you even golf?
Country club person. My husband loves golf and plays.
I like golf.
It was for him, but I was like this just isn't right. So that was one of the first things that I focused on. Mm-hmm. The other thing you have to remember, if you make a lot of money, you pay a lot of taxes.
Oh yeah.
So even if you're making $700,000-$800,000, at the end of the day, you're bringing in $400,000, which mm-hmm. is a lot. But if you owe $2 million, $2 million is after tax. After tax, it's not before tax. So you have to make twice that amount to even pay that amount off.
That's right.
So the other thing I did was I started listening to Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Now my husband hates Dave Ramsey. He just
him and my mom. I'm like grumpy Uncle Dave, okay?
Exactly.
So he is so grumpy, but I like his money philosophy, but he's so grumpy. I had to stop listening to him.
I know. I listen sometimes, but what I try to do is learn. So I'm one of those people who try to make everything a game to figure out how it works. So when someone would call in with a question, I would try to answer it before he did. To try to learn about, okay, this is the process. This is what they're doing. This is how it may work, and see if it jived or not. The other thing I really listened to and loved was the debt payoff screams.
Those are awesome.
Yeah. I would listen to someone's story. And honestly, like, I'm not a crier. Like, I'm one of those like bad people who are just like, it doesn't matter what happens. Like, I don't cry, but like, I would honestly drive into work crying, listening to these people. And I'm like, hell, they're paying it off and I still owe for this country club and these houses that we don't even live in. And I'm like, oh, I'm such a screw up. But you know what? It motivated me. It motivated me to keep going. If they can do it, why can't I? I completely can't. I just have to change some things. The other things is my kids have always been raised like very frugally. So I don't know if you have it there. We don't shop at like major grocery stores. We don't go to Whole Foods. Like my kids, I don't even think they've been in a Whole Foods before.
I plead the fifth right now.
Okay. So you're one of those whole paycheck people. Okay.
No, I don't pay a whole paycheck. I'm a personal finance blogger. I got ways. I am not paying my whole paycheck. I spend $225 a month on organic food, but I got ways. So.
Okay.
say.
I'm pretty sure soon you'll share. Okay.
I'll share those. That'll be a whole nother podcast.
But we were shopping at Walmart for a while, and then I deemed that was too expensive. Oh. So now we shop at Aldi's.
We don't have that. Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, but any place that you have to have a quarter to get a shopping cart is, dang, you know.
They make you pay for the shopping cart?
Oh, yeah. It helps keep the prices low. So you have to bring a quarter. You put it in, and you get your own shopping cart. There's nothing name brand, but occasionally they do. So everything's off label. So my kids don't even choose labels anymore. They like Frosted Flakes that has, like, nobody.
They don't even know.
Exactly. But you know what? Honestly, for a family of five, well, my son is now out of the house because he's 19. So I want to say less than $80 a week, and we get meat, eggs, vegetables, everything.
Aldi, so, where are you in my life?
Exactly. Well, hopefully they'll come to a town nearby because it is so worth it, and the food is good. So we definitely cut back with that. My kids, I mean, we don't really – they go shopping for clothes once a season, and only because they grow out of them. Mm-hmm. So the way that they were stacked, the two girls are fairly – they're like 2 years apart. So there's a lot of hand-me-downs. We get a lot of gifts from people, and this, since my husband's in sports, we get a lot of like different types of gear, and they wear that. I mean, we don't excessively spend, and honestly, yeah, I love Hugo Boss, but guess what? I love Hugo Boss on eBay. I'll spend $40 on the dress. I'll go to my little tailor down the street for $20, and it will look like I got it from Michigan Avenue. Okay.
Nice. Nice.
So that was my plan. That's how we started just saving money. But then it's different. So once you actually start making money, you become what's called an accredited investor. And there are a lot of opportunities that are available. But guess what? You can't take advantage of them unless you have money. And so it's kind of that double-edged sword of how do you get there? And then you can't really progress unless you've saved money, because banks won't just give you loans for investments because they may lose their money and there's no collateral.
Right.
So we really had to go through the process of paying off debt, saving money, doing investments, and then living like we want to.
Did you sell, I mean, you're talking about investments, but I'm curious, did you sell any of the properties that you had already, or did you like increase the rents, or what did that look like?
It was very ugly. Oh. So the one house we lived in Maryland, it was 2008, 2009. So that was a
great you don't even have to go there. Already I'm feeling a little pain just hearing this story.
Yeah, so we had this great couple. It was a family that moved in a year, everything was great. And then I think he got caught smoking weed. She divorced him. They didn't pay their electric bill, and they stopped paying rent. So that was $2,000 a month I had to float.
Wait, how much?
$2,000.
Oof.
Yeah. Yep. And it's in a different state. So there was no time that I could just go check on and see what's going on. So thankfully, we were able to get them moved out without having to go to court and evict them and everything like that. And then I want to say we had to, because I mean, numbers make a difference. I want to say it was close to 30-some thousand that we had to pay in order to clean up the house.
Oh, my from God.
Mold. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying I just haven't even totaled everything that we had to pay so far. Now for tax wise, I mean, some of that we could write off, but still, I mean, that's money I could have been using to pay student loans or put into the kids' college fund, but I don't have a choice. Like, we have to sell the house. We can't continue to pay $2,000 a month forever. We're not going to be moving back there. I can't be a landlord, 500 miles away. So we just had to do it. And so we did it. The other, lovely investment from my husband. We eventually sold also after the water heater blew up and the AC blew up and fired, you know, cause hooked us up. Yeah. Hooked up the ceiling that was like molded. Nothing was
right. Oh my God.
So that was only 15 or 20,000 before we sold that one. And thankfully we had a great realtor we had worked with before. And she helped us tremendously. She knew that we just did not have the ability to do what needed to be done. And she walked us through the process. So I'm so grateful for her, and we survived, and those houses are gone. So we only have one home now, and that's the one that we live in.
Mm-hmm. What happened with the Land Rover? Is it still with you guys?
No.
I was afraid to ask, but
no, that one's gone. So I don't know if you've ever owned one before, but
no, you
know,
I probably won't ever own one.
They are beautiful cars, but they are very fickle. So a lot of times there were electrical issues, and you just can't go to the guy on the corner and ask him to fix it because there are so many things that go wrong with them. Like my husband broke the windshield. We called the regular people just to come out and fix it. Well, the way that it's jimmied, it messes up the computer system for the car and the brake system. So we had to have it towed to a dealership. So after all of that, I told my husband, like, it's not even worth it. So we dropped it off at CarMax. Oh, I feel like people are judging me. Oh, I'm a horrible person.
No, but I think this is a really relatable but really funny story.
And so then we went looking on Craigslist. So this is the real deal, okay? So we don't buy new cars anymore. Mm-hmm. My cars that are currently in the garage are from Craigslist and eBay. So what we do is we decide this is the type of car I would like. Then we look online to see what's available, the pricing. We'll go to a dealership or CarMax, test drive it to make sure, hey, this is what we really like. And we'll wait for a week and wait until we see a really good deal and we'll buy the car. We don't have car payments. We save up and pay for them in cash. It makes the world a difference. So that's what we have now. We have Volvos now because they last until 2 years.
Forever.
Yep. So eBay and Craigslist is parked right now in the garage.
What was the hardest thing for you guys to do as a family? Like, what was the hardest financial change?
Not living like the Joneses. Mm-hmm. Knowing that all of my partners were traveling and going to foreign countries and flying first class and going to every conference. They all had kids in private school. And just knowing that even you, if you were a doctor and you made money, that because of the choices you made earlier in life, that just wasn't an option for you. That was, it was kind of the, I chose poorly early on and now I have to pay for my sins.
I feel like, but it's not even that you chose poorly. I feel like it just, you had certain resources. You used the resources you had. You had a certain amount of knowledge. You did the best you could with the information that you had. And I think that for a lot of people, especially people of color who are attaining these higher levels of education and not even just people of color, just people in America, because it's so expensive across the board. It's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't situations, scenarios really, where you're like, I want to be a surgeon. And that is going to, how many years did you train? 12 or 14? How long did it take?
4 years. So yeah, four years of college, 4 years of med school, mm-hmm. 7.5 years of residency.
Mm-hmm. So you have this, you have this long road ahead of you. You know the payout is good, but there's a lot of like landmines in between you and graduating or you and becoming an actual doctor, practicing right. doctor. So the there's maybe you don't complete the work. Like maybe you're going halfway through and you're like, I hate this. Maybe you've gone halfway through, you can't pass your boards. Maybe mm-hmm. you've gone halfway through and you're like, I can't even afford this because of all the loans. Like what would you change about how like if you could go back in time and change the way you paid for school, what would you do? Is there even a possibility that would even be a choice? Like nowadays there are apps and things where people can apply for like a billion different scholarships at the same time because it's all digital. Mm-hmm. But
what in the old days?
Yeah, in the olden days, what could you have done? you would have had to apply for a lot. You could have done the same thing. It just would have been a billion times more time consuming.
It was. So full disclosure, I actually had the opportunity to go to med school for free and I chose not to.
Oh my God.
I know. But you know what? I don't regret it.
Okay.
A lot of times people are like, oh, it's just the education that makes a difference.
No.
At elite levels,
It's who you know.
And you mm-hmm. go to the place that has the names, that makes the phone call, that gets you the job. And so I had a full ride to undergrad and med school. I defected and went to a different medical school that was highly ranked. And that's what gave me the opportunity to train. So I don't regret it, and I wouldn't change it at all. There are newer opportunities to pay for medical school. I never thought about military service, but that's one way to pay for medical school. My parents had the agreement that they would pay for undergrad. And since I had a full ride, they just used that money for my sister. Mm-hmm. So for my children, definitely we have educational accounts to help them pay for undergrad. And so they're not starting their life in the same type of debt we are. Right. But honestly, it's like you would never be where you are if you went a different path. And I feel that I've learned so much. Our family is so much closer. My husband and I are so much closer. We've still seen the world. We've lived. And you know what? The journey was important. We needed to go through that journey to get where we are right now.
How long did it take you to pay off all of the debt besides your mortgage?
Let's see. I finished medical school in 01. Mm-hmm. And then we were done early 2017.
Wow.
So during residency, I was paying the minimal that I had to. Right. So I really didn't start aggressively paying off anything because I couldn't focus on 15 things at once. Mm-hmm. So probably 09 is when I started, i.e. when the student loan people found me.
Oh my God. That's awesome. They're like, hey, Dr. Jen, we're here. Like,
are you done yet? Have you finished? Oh, no, I got one more quarter.
Wow.
So, yeah, quite a few years. But you know what? Slow and steady does win. It really does.
For someone who's listening to your story and just heard the time that it took, I mean, you sound so happy and so, like, your energy is very light and bubbly. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them about dealing with a long-term debt repayment situation? And what is it like being on the other side where you're just paying off that mortgage?
I don't think I looked at the time span. I looked at how I wanted to live my life. And by cutting back, I realized I really wasn't missing much. There's money, you need money for certain things, but there's so much more that you can do without money. I think one of the things in my life, I've traveled a lot, especially when I was growing up. So I would see how other people really live. So the average American household makes what, $55,000?
Yeah.
And you know what? People are actually happy. The data says what, 75,000, more than that, you're not much happier.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's true because you don't need to buy stuff. If you're looking for like validation and support outside of your own self and family, you're not going to find it. Doesn't matter if you drive a Ferrari. It's not going to make you that much happier because you're missing something else, something that only you can give yourself and you can't buy it. So I would say I didn't even look at how long it would actually be. I just made a plan and said, if I do this, I will start paying off things. And each time I pay something off, I celebrate it, not with buying something, but more of like, I can do this. I got this. Just more of, I mean, who am I going to share it with? Like, I just, who am I going to tell besides my husband? I
wasn't everyone else is like, we don't want to hear your sob story.
Exactly. So I would just be happy because you know what? I was actually doing something. I wouldn't even worry about it. Just make a plan, stick to it. And guess what? You'll reach your goal. You will.
Actually, I have another question about it, kind of still on the same topic, which is, if you're paying off all this debt and you're trying to enjoy your life, like what were some of the things that you guys did? You kind of had to reimagine fun and like fun as your family saw it. What did you guys do for fun?
Okay. So I feel like I'm going to be judged again. So
there is no judgment from this kid. Okay. So what did you guys do?
All right. So we'd do family night. We'd watch Netflix. No, I don't have a Netflix account. We use my sister's.
Shady. You guys are shady.
I mean, we would window shop because we really didn't need anything. We would try on stuff. What else would we do? We'd travel and visit family, mm-hmm. just in the car. What else would we do? We would go to DC a lot in the free museums.
what else would we do? Once a year, I take my kids overseas, and not because it's like this fancy vacation, but to see how the rest of the world lives. Mm. I mean, everywhere else, people speak more than one language. In the U.S., a lot of times our kids aren't raised to be bi and trilingual. So we really reinforce Spanish at home. Mm-hmm. My nanny now, I call her my wife because she helps me probably more than the kids. But she only speaks Spanish and like speaks Spanish to my children because that's important. That's what they need to learn in this world. Mm-hmm. So we did things that didn't cost money, but just caused us to spend time together. And it worked out. This is all that we don't have cable. If they have YouTube and my sister has Netflix, like what else do you really need? My kids don't watch commercials. Now, one year it became an issue because a kid asked for cantaloupe and my parents were concerned, but we got her the cantaloupe. It was good.
What was the deal with the cantaloupe? Like, why were they intrigued by cantaloupe?
I don't know. They acted like I never gave them fresh fruit or something.
I find that really bizarrely funny and interesting. Kids are so weird. Now you have begun. So are you now, like, you went through this situation. You turned things around. Mm-hmm. How are you now in the financial blogging space, blogosphere, if you will? Like, why did you decide to do this to yourself? Like, do these interviews and kind of put yourself out there so that people could find you? Like, what happened?
Because once I paid everything off and realized that a lot of my friends were still hurting and they didn't have anyone to turn to, I felt... I put myself in their position 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, if they hear that there's someone who's talking about it, talking about numbers, about what you can do, at least, I mean, there's someone to commiserate with you because no one else has sympathy for you. So this is someone who went through it just like you did. So at least if I put my story out there and I'm straightforward and transparent about really what we had to do, then other people would be motivated. I mean, medicine is changing. It used to be that we as physicians were in control. A lot of times now people are employed. We're having 27-year-old MBAs telling us who we need to see and what we need to do. So there's a lot of frustration in medicine right now. My concern is that a lot of people will just opt out. It's not worth it. But you know what? You can't really do that if you owe student loans. That's where right. else are you going to pay off $300,000? Like, what else are you going to do? So if I can help them figure out a way to pay off their debt, become free from these financial worries, they can do what they want to do. If they want to practice medicine because they actually love it, it's going to be a completely different profession. They're doing what they're supposed to do, not because they have to do it.
What services, like how can people find you?
Well, if they're a physician, I have a group on Facebook. It's a closed group, so no one can see outside of that group what you post. So there's a lot of transparency there. It's called Financially Fit Physicians with Dr. Jen MD. And I post information about money, investments, taxes, what you need to look for, retirement. And then on my page, which is Dr. Jen MD, I actually do live streams. I do it about like disability insurance, life insurance, emergency funds. And I don't do them consistently. I just, whenever I'm thinking about something and I'm like, you know what? I had to spend a lot of time to learn about this. Let me just share. I post it on there also. I actually wrote a book about it also. It's called Financially Fit Physicians. People can find that on my website. It's drjenmd.com. And I do one-on-one coaching. So a lot of times it's hard because if you're starting to learn about money, it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And as a physician, you don't have that much time. You're balancing so many things at one time. So a lot of times I'll meet with people one-on-one, like through Zoom or online, and just we work through their budget. We talk about who they owe. We talk about side gigs, other ways to make money in medicine without patient care. I mean, I do a lot of consulting. I have international businesses. I mean, I do a lot of things. I don't know how I have time before you ask, but I do a lot of things outside of just patient care that brings in significant revenue now. Why? Because now, I mean, I have time. I'm not worried about paying bills. So I have time to think, to create, and to build. And that's what I enjoy doing.
Now you've got me curious about these these like other little side gigs. And I say little a bit facetiously, but what does that look like for a physician? No, a surgeon. Mm-hmm. Let's get that correct.
So there's a lot that can be done in medicine. So one of the things is that when you become prominent in a certain space, i.e. people know your name, you write the papers, you may have written the chapter and you're giving the lectures, a lot of people approach you to use their product, discuss their product. But you know what? You don't have to. You can actually set up an LLC or you can be a sole proprietor and do consulting. If you want to pick my brain, you're a big pharma company. You can pay for that. Mm. And they will. They will sign contracts. They'll do WebExes. They'll talk to you and they will send you a check. So that's how I started initially. Then you build relationships. And so you can see how the business world looks at medicine, looks at physicians. You can help your other friends refer them in if there's other opportunities you hear about, things like that.
What has the response been like with other colleagues, and in particular colleagues who are using your services? Like how has that been for you in terms of being that person providing the service? And were you surprised at how much it resonated with the people who come to you?
I was surprised and initially a little bit embarrassed, because my goal was to be transparent, because I feel like, especially like in the online world, if you can write whatever you want and there's no one who's going to really verify it. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure that I would be transparent, let people know the real deal, and just be like a real person. So I'm surprised that people open up. If they feel that you've been through the journey and understand where they're coming from, they will tell you the real deal. They will show you the numbers. They will talk about their debt. They will talk about their home life. They'll talk about their marriage. And they'll listen to what you say and other like outside non-judgmental recommendations of how you can change things or what other resources are out there or help like guide them to side gigs and different things like that. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was kind of embarrassing is when like people I actually work with started following me on Instagram and things like that. So it was a little bit weird because you wonder, are they following you because they need the information? Are they following you because they just know you? And so like, I don't bring it up if I see them, but it's just a little bit different because I'm not a very public person. I'm a fairly private person, but this really opens up your life to the world.
If someone's listening to this show and would like to connect with you outside of the Facebook group and your page, how can they reach you?
The best way is probably through my website. My email address and the phone number is on there. And that's Dr. Jen, JENNMD.com. There's also a subscribe button. So I do send out emails with information and sometimes live streams. But that's the best way to get in contact with me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel really inspired and excited for other doctors who are out there who might be feeling a sense of shame about trying to do this amazing thing, which is become surgeons, become general practitioners, become whatever it is they're trying to do. They've committed to this, quite honestly, it's a lifelong process to become educated, stay qualified, stay certified. And you're right, there is a certain amount of lack of empathy and sympathy if these individuals find themselves unable to pay the money back, because everyone's like, well, you make so much money. So I think that you've provided a wonderful respite, if you will, for these people so that they don't feel alone. And that's a big part of why I blog and podcast is, you know, in my case, I found myself having to help my mom. She lost her job. It was at the wrong time, of course, because it's never at the right time. I was in graduate school and working at Starbucks, and I had no financial skills other than charging credit cards because I had no concept of any of that. And it was just a mess. Mm-hmm. I've decided that the only way I can turn that around, besides just finishing my debt freedom journey and cleaning things up and earning more, obviously, is to do something similar, which is to give a voice to people like myself who need a voice. And it was weird because I found out as I blogged that I found out statistics that over 50% of African American women in particular find themselves in similar situations. So what, you know, at the time I thought it was just me, like, woe is me and why am I the person having to deal with this? And then I discovered, no girlfriend, you and about 50% of other people who look like you will find themselves caring for a loved one financially. And so I think anything that we can do to help people, regardless of color, quite honestly, in my view, to get their money right, to take control, take charge, it's so worth it. And if you could leave the audience with one piece of a final piece of advice, that would be awesome.
What I would say is probably live in your financial truth. Mm. Don't fake the funk. Figure out what you really have, what you really owe. And if you don't like it, change it.
You heard it first, people. So thank you, Dr. Jen. Keep up all the good work that you're doing. And I appreciate you spending your time with us. I know you've got the kids. I know they're not little, but still they're your kids. And I know that you're busy. And so I really appreciate you spending time with the Michelle is Money Hungry podcast and listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was great. Thank you.